Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/verbalshenanigans. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Brennan again on Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. It's episode 52, Michael Berlew.
Yeah, keep going, man.
We had a great 50th.
That was excellent, man. Big party went all night.
Big celebration with the Enterman's banana bread cake, yeah. Which I ate a whole bunch of last night. But, then we had Aaron McManus, professional pool player. So sticking in that realm, we got a monster on the podcast today.
Really?
We do. Someone that, if you know me, it's pretty amazing to talk to.
Oh, is it me?
It's not you. It's not you, and it's not the damn loud dog for once. But if you may know him from, when I think of him, I think of long flowing hair, beard, gritty defensive back from the United States, Mr. Marcelo Balboa. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, buddy. How are you guys?
I'm doing great, man. It's an honor and pleasure to talk to you.
Man, you must be as old as I am, man. Holy cow.
No, I'm not that old. Not that old.
So you're insulting our guests on your first comment,
yes,
right there.
Insulted. No,
I'm
but,
not that agent, go. Sir. No.
No. But I remember, I remember growing up watching you, and I remember... especially like the 90, I remember paying close attention to the 94 World Cup team and that's when it was really close to home. And I think I was in like sixth grade at the time. So it was,
there you go. Throw in the grade in 94. Thank you.
Oh, come on. You're not that old. I would trade your life for my life there.
I don't know. You had a good set a couple nights ago, Scott. I don't know about that.
I did
World Cup. Decent open micer. I don't know.
Yeah.
There you go. There we go.
I did have a killer 10-minute set at Willie's Starlight Bar and Grill, and that.
But oh man.
So Marcelo, you. I guess we'll start at the beginning here. You were born in Chicago, right?
I was. My dad. my dad played professional soccer in Chicago. He was contracted. Argentina. He played with Bob Gansler,
uh-huh,
with the Chicago Mustang.
Right. So, and your dad played in Argentina too?
Yep, he played in Argentina, and then he came here to the U.S. and played here.
Wow. Now, like in that era, like I guess you were born in '67, right?
Yes.
So, what was soccer like at the time in Chicago? Like, I can't imagine it was flourishing as this game. It had to be almost more of a niche thing at the time.
Buddy, I was a year old, man. I don't know what the hell happened in Chicago.
Oh.
here's what I mean? My dad was lucky enough to be contracted to come to the United States.
Uh-huh.
He came over for the first year and got the roots in, got everything in. Then my mom came over, and then we were born. And me and my brother were born in Chicago. From there, we went back a few years later. We went back to Argentina for 3 years, and then came back to the United States. But we lived in California, and that's kind of where we ended up making our roots and hanging out and pretty much growing up our whole lives.
Wow. So I'm guessing your dad was the driving force behind playing soccer a little bit there then.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen. My dad played professional soccer. It's what he knew, and we as kids played it. He coached us. And, you know, we would, on the weekends, we would watch. We had that big satellite dish, I think, when they came out. Initially, there was like 50 feet wide, 50 feet high. It took up the whole freaking backyard. And we would tune in games back then. So, it's, you know, it's just we were born with soccer in our life because of my dad.
What kind of player was your dad? Was he a defender too, or was he was a midfielder?
He was more of a midfielder. He you know, Bob Ganza told us a little bit. They called him the radio because he would never shut up on the field, which I thought was interesting. And
it's funny. I call my
kind of play. He was like my brother. He was very skillful, from what I understand.
Nice. I call my co-host here the radio, too, because he didn't shut the hell up either. So
that's correct.
Oh, boy.
So that was
kind of my dad, you know what I mean?
So you're growing up playing, obviously, and I'm guessing you get some good coaching from your father. But so you're in California when you really started to get exposure to playing the game a little bit more? Or?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't that big back then. I started in AYSO, and as you grow, that's when the clubs just started developing. ODP was huge back then.
Right.
And, you know, little by little, we got into club soccer, started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. That's kind of the way, the road we took. But we started in AYSO and kind of worked our way, figured out what club was, and my dad just coached us pretty much since I played soccer at 6'7". Up until I was 18, 19, I went to college.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I coach at the high school level now. I coach JV. Now it's like here in Jersey, like club teams are, it's actually become like way oversaturated. And it's like, it's like all these kids are missing out on their high school experience because these clubs don't want, they don't want them to play high school anymore. So they're missing that whole like bonding time. And, a lot of the clubs are selling them the world. They're being told they're going to play here, they're going to play there, and I feel like it's such a shame for these kids to miss their high school soccer. It's like those are the best times in my life, like playing on this.
When we grew up, the only way college coaches would come see you was through high school games because that was the biggest avenue out there. And I think little by little now, in the modern era that we're in now. There's not a lot of college coaches to go to high school games anymore. They'll go to the state championship game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to club soccer. But I think club soccer, too, remember back then, you couldn't make a living off coaching soccer or running a club. Nowadays,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are making hundreds of thousands of dollars running clubs so they can make a living. I'll be honest with you. I coach high school, too. I got the boys varsity team here at Monarch High School in Colorado. And the only kids that don't play high school are the kids that are in the academy system.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
They don't play, but everybody else plays. And I agree. I had a blast playing in high school, the camaraderie with the friends, and being able to have some fun. So I agree. It's disappointing that some of these kids don't get to experience the high school game.
Now that's got to be pretty damn awesome for your kids, man. Their coach is an ex-USA soccer player. They got to be fired up about that one.
Here's a good story for it. My son during the high school season plays football.
Oh.
So I don't even get to coach my kid in high school. My son's playing football at the same time. So, but you know, I love what I do. I've been fortunate enough to be able to play soccer and travel around the world, and it's given me so much that I get my son doesn't get to play, but I so enjoy being able to coach and be around the kids. And hopefully in 4 years, you can kind of mold them and hopefully guide them in the right direction when it's time to go to college.
He still tells his international friends, yeah, he plays football. And they're like, oh, good. Perfect.
Now, did you grow up playing, did you play multi-sports or was it all soccer from day one?
No, man. My dad believed in making sure we were well-rounded
good,
athletes.
Good.
So in high school, California was different. So in California, I was able to play football at the beginning of the year, soccer in the middle of the year, and then baseball was at the end. I lettered in three sports. But before that, I mean, I was playing Little League baseball. I mean, you're going to laugh. I was on a swimming team. I played water polo. Wow. I even played basketball for my middle school. So my dad was a firm believer of letting us do all different types of sports.
That's great.
And, we narrowed it down when we were 14. He gave us the rule and the lecture of how we needed to break him down and what we wanted to do. So
nice. It's funny you said that because, I noticed through coaching that my favorite kids to coach are the multi-sport athletes. They're like the ones that, and I always find strangely that they become the best defenders. So I don't know, especially kids who play basketball for me always seem, and lacrosse players seem to become the most coachable players for whatever reason.
Yeah.
What do you think? It's leg work or something like that? Or is it just training?
The thing is you don't see that many nowadays.
Right. Exactly.
Nowadays, you don't see that many athletes playing dual sports because of the timing of where you live. Like here in Colorado, if you want to play football, you can't play soccer, but you can play football and baseball. You know what I mean? Or football and basketball.
Same thing
so
in
it's
Jersey.
Different, but yeah. You know how that goes. So, no, I think what it is if you look at a lot of the basketball players and a lot of the tennis players, what they talk about is they used to play soccer. The footwork is something huge. That is good for tennis, soccer, footwork is good for other sports. So my son is fortunate enough that he's played soccer a long time.
Right.
The person the coach said is like, you got fast feet. So because of being able to play dual sports.
Yeah. And I just find the kids who also play like the many different sports, it's like they seem to be, they're taking direction from so many different types of coaches. And like, I don't know, I just find them so much more coachable. Even some of the ones who don't come in as full-time soccer players, four seasons a year, they seem to respond more because they're being told by one coach this, one coach that. I don't know. I have a good time with those kids.
I'll agree a little bit there. I think that when you're playing two or three different sports, you have to be coachable and you have to be open-minded a little bit because you're doing different things and you can't do all three well.
Right.
So as a kid's trying to learn, the fact that he's got to be open to taking advice and taking coaching and the criticism and the positive and the coach trying to mold this kid into doing as best he can at that sport. So I think those kind of kids are very coachable.
Yes. Okay. So you played through high school. You're playing club one.
Yep.
So you played in college too, right?
Yep. Played at San Diego State.
San Diego State. So what was that
yes,
like?
Sir.
What was did you enjoy college soccer as much as high school, or was it all just growing towards the next step?
Really? You're going to ask me if I had fun in college playing soccer?
I hated it, but somebody gave me a paycheck and it was over.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's break this down. High school, I still lived at home. In college, I got to play soccer, and I didn't live at home. let's
in San Diego. In beautiful San Diego. All right, I take that question back.
Bad defense, Scott. Bad defense.
It was. I got to be honest with you. It was awesome. It was. It was a different experience coming from a Hispanic family, where mom took care of us. You know, mom is the lady who really took care of us, and to be able to have to go on your own was a great learning experience. But anytime you get to play soccer, you get a full. I got a full scholarship to go to San Diego State. I lived with Eric Winalda.
Ah, that's awesome.
Oh, wow.
That's all. That's all I'm going to say to you.
So this guy was a good soccer player, apparently? Right, let me Google him for a minute.
Just a bit. So that's pretty cool that two of you came from the same college, too. You would play later on together, too.
Yeah, we got lucky enough to have to go through college and then into the professional with the national team for a few World Cups was a pretty cool experience. It doesn't happen too often where you and your roommate play on the national team and play in World Cups together. So
no,
it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, I was going to imagine that's pretty common. But so you get out of college or during college, is this where the national team comes knocking, or is this where the pros come knocking a little bit? Like which?
I went to school. We all go to school.
Mm-hmm.
To hope that we can take that next step.
Right.
And once we got named to the World Cup team in 90, it was a decision we had to make, both of us, if we were going to stay in college, or we were going to sign a professional contract with the U.S. national team, because wow. they were giving contracts back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was it's never an easy decision, because you want that education, but as a kid, you have an opportunity to get paid to play in a World Cup and to train to play in a World Cup. It wasn't that hard of a decision, I don't think, for either one of us. We kind of looked at each other, and we're like, all right, we're going to the Waldorf Astorium in New York, and we're going to sign a national team contract. I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good right now.
That's awesome. So,
yeah.
So was that fun?
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
So the 90 World Cup, getting to the World Cup, how many cuts did you have to go through, make the team, and you got to talk about the first World Cup experience. That's got to be insane.
There wasn't that many cuts. If you remember back then, the player pool wasn't that big.
Okay, yeah.
For the 90 World Cup, I think the only thing we had to overcome were injuries.
Right.
I tore my MCL and was able to come back. There wasn't that many players at that time, that big of a pool. So
they kind of knew they wanted to.
Well, we kind of knew, but you don't know until that final roster is put. Especially for me, the 90 World Cup, I didn't go to Trinidad for the last game because they sent us college kids back to our colleges. So they took an older team. So now, you do sign a contract, but there was no guarantee. And you're probably thinking 60-40, you got a chance of making that World Cup team. You sign a contract, now you're thinking to yourself, damn, now I'm probably about 80-20, I'm going to make that team, and as long as I stay healthy. So,
wow.
When your coach finally tells you that you are going to live your dream and play in the World Cup in 90, that's kind of when you say, rock on, man, now it's real. Now it's worth leaving college and being able to do what you want to do and what you love to do.
Just the idea of going, just to the World Cup, the world stage on that. And I'm sure you guys went in with, the world thinking you had no chance at whatnot. But just to say that you made the World Cup team, that has to make every practice, every everything you went through feel completely worth it.
Just being able to play on a team that hasn't qualified in 40 years and to represent your country.
Right.
As kids, we all have dreams. Some people want to be doctors, lawyers. Most of us want to play in a World Cup. We wanted to play in the Olympics. So to be able to walk out there and wear the red, white, and blue and walk out and say you represented your country in the biggest sporting event in the world was pretty cool, man. And I'll be honest with you. You also just don't want to be there. You want to be a participant. You want to play. I think it's great. I think we all thought it was great being there. But to not step onto a field in a World Cup, I remember me and John Doyle saying our goal was to get on the field in 3 games. And I had a lot of respect for Bob Ganser because I was starting before the World Cup. I tore my MCL. And World Cup came around. And Bob Ganser was very clear. He says, I'm going to give the guys who got me here the first opportunity and play them. And I couldn't respect a coach more saying that to me and saying he's going to start, and see how it goes from there. I was like, I knew where I stood. And 45 minutes later, I'm stepping onto the field against Czechoslovakia to play in my first World Cup game. So as players, all we ever want from a coach is honesty. And I couldn't have asked any more from Bob Ganser, the honesty he broke out to me in the 90 World Cup.
Yeah.
That's cool. Let me ask you, now moving a lot of people who remember soccer, we all remember the 94 team, but what was the scene like in 1990 when really soccer hasn't, taken the steps like where we see today with the MLS? Did you guys get a lot of coverage from news affiliates?
In 90?
Yeah.
Nah, man. We were a team that nobody really knew. People looked at me and they're like, who's the U.S.? And we didn't do, and let's be honest, we didn't do any favors walking out on that field and losing to Czechoslovakia the way we did.
Mm-hmm.
It was an eye-opening experience. I think we were all ready for the World Cup. We've seen it on TV. We've played international games, but I don't think we knew what the magnitude was of a World Cup, because I remember walking in the locker room and we walked out of the tunnel, and there where we were talking how much big we're going to be, bigger, stronger, more physical than Czechoslovakia. And when you walk out onto the out of the locker room and into the tunnel, and I think the smallest guy was probably 5'10", 5'11". Everybody else was 6'1", 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah.
You were like, I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And we didn't do ourselves any favor. So I think we thought we knew what the World Cup was about, and then we realized what the World Cup was about after our first game.
What now, when you get to the World Cup, what's the treatment like of the athletes? Like, you know, you hear like the Olympics, you hear like these horror stories of people staying in these, you know, like in this last Olympics, like the conditions weren't well and the athletes were, you know, put in not in the greatest condition. What are the conditions like, and like, how do they keep you? Are you all stay together in a hotel? Like, how does that work?
No, we stayed in a military base where we were surrounded. It was secure. Nowadays it's different. Back then it was a lot different than what it is now. Now they're staying in these beautiful hotels. Back then we were the U.S. We were isolated. No one knew what was going to happen. So it was great, man. Who cares where you sleep?
Yeah.
Who cared where we practice? To be honest with you, man, we were just smiling every time we walked out on the pitch. And you know what? We're in the World Cup, man. Yeah. We got tons of clothes from Adidas. our family's got to come see us play in the World Cup. We were like, rock on. Again, up until you realize after the first game that what this was event, what was it about? We knew what it was about, but man, I tell you what, you're getting there. You've got clothes waiting for you in these huge bags. You've got cleats. You've got tennis shoes. You're thinking, man, life is good, and then you've got to perform, and it was like, ah, oh, Lord, here we go. So
everything was great, then the game started.
Exactly.
You know what is great? I'm looking at a picture of you from 1990. You got a sweet mustache going on.
Yeah. There's two ways of describing that. It's the porn mustache, the Pepe Le Pew mustache.
Which do you prefer?
Neither, to be honest with you. Every time somebody sees me and they send that picture, those are the two comments I get. So.
Oh, man.
I mean, and here comes the American players. Bonk, chicka, wong, wong.
We were full of, look at that 90 World Cup team. We were all full of mullets back then. Man.
So you go from the 90 World Cup to the 94 World Cup, which had to be just amazing, like to bring it home like that. And what was that experience like compared to the first one? Like now you're a veteran at this point a little bit. You're coming on the second one. Your hair and mustache are even sweeter for
I'm not even going to touch that one. Now, I'll tell you what, it was bittersweet for me. And I'll say this, because I tore my ACL in 93.
Right.
And wasn't sure if I was going to make the World Cup team or not. And again, every World Cup, there's always been something. And I got to thank Bora. There were two other coaches on that team that tried to get me removed from that team.
Uh-huh.
That said I wasn't going to make it back in time. And Bora's the only one. Bora is the only one that believed in me. Bora is the only one that said, no, he's going to stay around. He's going to recover from his ACL. And he kept me around. He kept me around until I got healthy. It took me 6 months from an ACL back in 93 to come back. And I was very fortunate. It was the work I put in, but if it wasn't for Rudy Rutowski, if it wasn't for Bora, if it wasn't for Fernando Clavijo, I probably wouldn't have made that World Cup. In my World Cup days, that I just didn't want to get out of bed. Fernando Clavijo basically grabbed me by the hair and says, get your ass out of bed and we're going to go work out.
Nice.
And Rudy Wadowski was the guy who, when I got there, he's like, all right, let's go. He goes, enough of this, kitty, we're done. He, let's go. And he's the one that got me back into shape. So
right.
If it wasn't for those three guys, I probably wouldn't have been in one of the most special World Cups that was for me.
What was it like now soccer had come to the United States, like everyone was coming to us, like That had to be like just feel kind of special on its own, and like finally the game's getting a good amount of attention. Like I remember growing up here, you know, by Giant Stadium, and they had like you know, like the shirts all over with that dog mascot.
It was you know, again, it was a section woke up and it was different.
No problem.
You gotta be able to multitask when I'm talking to you guys.
Absolutely, that's what we're doing. We're eating, drinking a beer.
I'm scratching a dog.
Oh, nice.
He's scratching a dog.
Yeah. No, you know what? It's what we all wanted. You know what I mean? We want to play in a World Cup, and now it was even more special because of the World Cup being played in the United States. An opportunity for us to show the world what happened in '90. You know, it wasn't really the U.S. Right. And the pressure of us having to get out of our group, the pressure of us having to host it and never hosted the World Cup was something that had a lot of pressure on us, you know. Every group up until in every host country that hosted the World Cup got out of the first round. So we had that kind of pressure on us.
Right.
And again, you know, the teams we had to play, looking at Colombia, was one of the top three teams in the world at that time.
I have the Colombia video right up on my computer right now with your infamous bicycle kick.
Yeah, with the best miss ever. Thanks.
Oh, my God. And then just the reaction from Miola.
They're expressing the little the inch away. So, you know what? It was a dream come true because of, I think, of what happened in 94 in soccer in the United States. The way people responded, the way people put the media coverage behind it, and the fact that we were able to do our job. I mean, and that was to get out of our group, to get enough points to get out. Unfortunately, we ran into a machine, which was Brazil at the time. Mm-hmm. And again, as expected, you know, they did what they had to do. You know, they played with 10 players, and they still looked like they had 11 players on the field. But, you know what? We were proud. We were proud of what we did. We were proud of what we did for soccer in this country. And it was good because leading into 96, we knew that that's when the MLS was going to start.
Yeah. So, what's Alexi Lalas like?
What you see is what you get, my man. You follow him on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Was he fun?
TV. Lexi.
You know, it's funny. I go to games, and if you see a picture of me, I got a pretty big red beard. And every time I go to a game, everyone's like, Lalas. I'm like, yep, that's me. It's me trying to get free tickets.
Well, you know, I'll say this. At least you're lucky. I have dark hair, I have a goatee, and I still have people say to me, Lala, Lala. No, I'm not Lala. No. So at least you got the red hair, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That was a cool team, man. You guys had, like, you know, you had a lot of personalities on that team, too. Like, you know, between you and Lalas and Kobe Jones and, you know... You guys had.
You're gonna leave off John Hart.
Oh yeah, Miola. I mean, you had like tons of personality. You were like the '86 Mets.
So let me ask. I mean, with all these personalities, you know, '94 comes around, all the celebrity status and all. Did you guys have some experiences with it? Anything crazy, like celebrities or anything like that?
No, you know, when you're playing and you're isolated, you pretty much don't get to see that side of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? We heard rumors that Arnold Schwarzenegger was there. We got to meet Robin Williams.
You should have put Schwarzenegger on that back line, man.
Yeah.
You Lalas and Arnold.
I always thought he was like 6'3", 6'4". He looks huge on TV. And then you see him, he's my size, 6 feet, 6'1". I'm like, oh, okay. I can live with that. twice the muscle mass of me. But, you know, but it was cool. You know, I think everybody was following the World Cup in 94. Everybody wanted to see what it was about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember, like, Oprah was in the Chicago. The president was out to the game.
Yeah,
everybody was going out to it, man.
Yeah.
What did you think of the denim jerseys?
That's kind of like the same question about high school and college. You know what it was? You know what it was? Is
I love them personally.
They were fun to not wear. How's that? You got a World Cup, and I never thought that they were going to have. Nobody thought that we were going to be wearing jean-colored uniforms. None of the guys on the team. We were like, oh, okay. We did like the white and red striped ones.
Yeah.
We thought those were pretty cool, but we just thought it was weird that we were wearing jeans with jean-colored jersey with stars on it. It was weird. It was cool. It was unique. It was unique. We'll leave it at that.
You guys should have came out with
jorts. That would have been the most awesome event. You would screw with Brazil's mind so much doing that. You know, coming out in Daisy Dukes.
We could have. I'm thinking to myself, it could have been worse. It could have been a red shirt with jean shorts with stars on it. I'm with you.
With like an eagle flying
over your shoulder. The U.S. rednecks coming to the field.
Yeah.
I like them now, though. It's like looking back. Like, I love when I see people who have them at the games and stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah. There it is.
I think now people love them. They're collector's items. You can't find them in too many places. But I think back then it was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Did you guys rally around it, though? Like, all right, you know, we're going to wear these with pride, you know?
Man, I'm not gonna lie, man. It took a while for us to pretend. It took a while for us to rally around those bad boys. It took us a little time. We tried. I think if I remember best, and I've taken quite a few concussions, but if I remember correctly, we fought it a little bit.
Right. It's all right though. You look sweet in them, dude.
Yeah, you know, I think they probably sold a lot that year, but. It was definitely something we didn't have a choice in, so we rallied around later on. But to be honest, it took us a little time to rally around those uniforms.
So post World Cup, this is when the MLS starts to start to take root, right? 96.
Yeah.
So, and you were on
Colorado.
You
Rapids.
Started with Colorado, right?
Well, here was the deal. It was supposed to start in 95, but something happened. That it wasn't going to start in 95. So most of us at that point now, we were kind of scrambling a little bit to find teams to go to Europe, you know, or to go to Mexico. Because now we have a year and a half to wait before the league starts.
Uh-huh. So you knew that you had a place to play, though, but it was just for a year and a half?
Or? Well, yeah, it was a year and a half away, and you had to play somewhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's where you saw a lot of guys. Tab was already in Spain. A lot of the guys that were... residence players in Mission Viejo, myself and other guys, Mike Sorber, myself, Cab Ramos, we all went to Mexico. Some guys went to Italy. Lexi went to Italy. We all went different places to play, but we knew the goal at the end was to make sure we came back and help start a league and make it successful. And I think we all knew we were going to come back in 96.
So the league starts. Now, The MLS initially started, they tried to kind of make some interesting rules at the time, like almost put its own spin on it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like
Americanize it. They had the regular clock, like football, instead of counting up, count it down.
Right. Didn't you have an interesting penalty kick, too? Like, wasn't that different? Or
they had the shootout.
The shootout, yes. Mm. So what did you guys think about that initially? Were you like... I don't know, this is kind of weird, or were you kind of like, all right, let's give it a try, or?
Listen, man, we didn't care.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. It was an opportunity for us to help start a league here in the United States.
Right.
It was an opportunity for us to build off the momentum we had in 94. If they wanted penalty kicks, we would do penalty kicks. If they wanted shootouts, we would do shootouts. I got to say, the shootouts were kind of fun, only because... Because you're a scud. You had 5 seconds to dribble 30 yards and to try to bend it around a goalkeeper. So yeah, I think it was kind of fun for the fans. But I think little by little, you know, it was an experimental league too at that time. We were trying different things. And little by little, you start weeding out things that didn't work, things the fans didn't like. And that's where we're at now. You know, new stadiums, FIFA rules, all of them. Like I said, it took a little time.
Yeah.
But... And I wouldn't take 1 second back of all those years I played in MLS.
Now, how many teams did the league start with?
What?
How many teams did the league start with? Was it eight?
God, I'm trying to think. The initial, I think, could have been eight. Let's see, the LA Galaxy, the San Jose Earthquake, Colorado.
Metro Stars.
Kansas City. The Metro Stars.
The two
Dallas.
Florida teams that folded.
Yeah.
Storm and Tampa Bay Storm.
Well, no, they didn't start. Remember, Florida, those guys didn't start right off the bat with us.
Oh, okay.
So I think we started with eight.
Yeah. So now, did you get drafted? Or assigned to Colorado, or is that where you chose to play?
What happened was the guys that were on the national team that were coming back had to put their top three places. So that you'd have a choice, you know what I mean?
Would
have a choice and see where people fit. So we had a choice. I had Colorado, then I had Dallas, and then I had L.A.
Hmm.
You know, I already played here in Colorado with the Foxes. I knew this was going to be a good place to raise a family. So we had the three choices. And I got lucky enough that I got Colorado. And all the guys that were on the national team at that time got a choice to put. They got three choices, and then the league would kind of see where everybody fit.
So you start in Colorado, and you were there for
6 years.
6 years, yeah, 6 years.
Yep.
So did you see a steady growth in the game, or was it like a kind of more of like a slow thing, and then all of a sudden, like, I mean, because now we're, I mean, now the league is doing amazing. Like, it's awesome. You know?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it was growing little by little, but we were all nervous. They told us that the funding and this and that they knew they had enough money for the league the last 3 years.
Wow.
So that's what we knew. So, yeah, exactly. So you knew when they asked you to do an appearance, you did the appearance. It didn't matter. I mean, I did an appearance where I was standing on Federal Boulevard outside of a liquor Argentinian-Mexican deli, they were doing an appearance there. And we were sitting. It was owned by Argentinians, but had a lot of Mexican product in it. And we were out there waving at cars, man.
I think I just did a comedy set there the other night.
Now I know why.
I'm telling you.
I just figured out why he said yes to our podcast. he just can't say no to anything.
There you go. So anything and everything we did back then to help to make sure that we put promotion and we put recognition and everything we could into this league so people would be a viable league.
That's awesome. Like, was there any like temptation for you to go play overseas or opportunities to go, or was it always like I'm gonna stay home and try to grow this? Like, I'm sure there's got to be, you know, different things going through your mind.
Yeah, I think that you had that backup plan, and I had that backup plan to go back to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a few teams that were interested in me in there, but. You know, I never took that step. I never took that step. I decided that I wanted to make it work here. And little by little, it got better and better and better. I think that if you look at the players back in the old days that were in this league, the foreign players from Echeverry to Valderrama, you had such great players, Jorge Campos, Hermosillo, you've had all these guys. Stoichkov came into this league,
yeah.
So... I think we saw once players like that started coming in, we thought, okay, this is going to work. It's going to take a long time, but it's going
to
work.
Yeah, I remember going to Giant Stadium, and it was the Metro Stars. They were doing a doubleheader, and I think it was Colombia was playing afterwards. So it was just like Valderrama, like everything. Like everyone had the Valderrama wig. It was such a good time. It was a doubleheader. It was so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
I remember Hugo Sanchez. We had all those guys. So
Now, when the league started, obviously it was pretty much going to football stadiums and items like that. What was the worst stadium to play at? Like starting at, would you say?
I don't think there was a bad one. I mean, how many times do you get to say you get to go to Ohio State? Playing the Buckeye Stadium, you know what I mean?
Yeah, nice. Jeez.
That's pretty freaking. I mean, even the other day, I got to do a game. I got to do a soccer game with a broadcaster at a Yankee Stadium. How do you complain?
You can't.
Yeah, exactly. San Jose, in every field had its advantages and disadvantages. When you went to San Jose, you played at Spartan Stadium, small field, width wise, it was tight, it was condensed, but the fans were right on top of you. You know what I mean? You went to the Pasadena. like the LA Galaxy at the time, they filled the bottom row at the Rose Bowl. So everywhere you got to play was a cool stadium. You know, it was just, you're just happy to be there. You were thrilled. Cotton Bowl. I got to play in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. You're sitting there going, you really right. couldn't complain. And then Columbus goes and builds the first soccer specific stadium. You're thinking yep. to yourself, yeah, this isn't so bad, man.
I mean, so you eventually ended with the Metro Stars, right?
Yes, ended with the Metro Stars. Yes.
Yeah. So do you know Jersey well at all, or?
I know Basking Ridge well.
Basking Ridge. That's where my brother used to live.
I lived up in Basking Ridge, and unfortunately, that year turned out to be a bad year for me. I couldn't get healthy. I got a bone bruise. I got traded from Colorado to the New York Metro Stars. Well, I was injured, and a lot of things that just I felt bad.
Right.
I was excited. I was excited to go to New York. I was excited to play with Tab and Mike Petke and Steve yep. Jolly and all those guys. And I just couldn't get healthy from the surgery I had here from Colorado.
Yeah. So you looking back, like looking at where the league is now, you have to be almost like proud, like just seeing all the new stadiums and the attention that's going, and to see that the league is making profit and growing, and you know, people are starting to pay attention.
It's expansion,
and
yeah.
You know, you're like one of the founding fathers almost of like the league and that World Cup team that like kind of spurred it on, and it has to feel good, like seeing like what the kids now get to play with and where they get to play and all that stuff. It has to be, you know, like damn, like look at this thing growing right before my eyes.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm just, I was just happy to be a part of something that developed into what it is, you know. Do I wish I was 15, 20 years younger? Sure. I would have loved to have been able to play at the StubHub Center and all these soccer-specific stadiums. You know, I went to Kansas City. They had a great stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just such beautiful stadiums. And I think that's the only thing that we look back on. It says, man, we were just not able to, you know, we were playing in football stadiums, but to be a part of something that started as a small league to where it's at now, yeah, you know, you feel pretty good, but it's, there's so many guys that, so many people that have put so much into to where this league is at, that we're just a small part of it, but man, I'm just so happy to be a part of it.
Oh man, it's cool. It's so cool to see like Portland and Seattle, and it's just so neat to see, and it's amazing.
I go to Philadelphia games all the time. The stadium is right yep. by the bridge. That is a beautiful stadium.
Uh-huh.
Team has something to work on, but still,
yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, everybody, we all have our ups and downs, right?
Yeah.
Especially in Philly.
Yeah, I was kind of telling friends, like, watching a couple games, for what I realized of the team, it's pretty much, all right, we're going to play defense for 70 minutes, wait till somebody closes their eyes, and then we'll try to shoot a goal. It worked a couple times, but...
Hey, you know, we all have off years. How's that?
Yeah.
Now, Marcelo, you're still involved in the league, right?
I do. I'm a broadcaster for the Colorado Rapids. I do their yep. English version. I also do Univision on Friday nights now.
Uh-huh.
On different Spanish, so I get to do that. So, yeah, I'm not involved with the league, but I'm involved on the broadcasting side for the
right.
Rapids.
So what's that like? What's that going from player to broadcaster?
You know what? It wasn't easy.
Right.
And the good thing is a lot of the guys that I've played with now are no longer in the league, so it's easier. It's always difficult when you're trying to criticize friends and you're trying to be honest. The thing is the education of the American fans has got in the last 10 years is just incredible. The acknowledgement of how they know. So as a local broadcaster, you can't play the homer guy. You've got to play a fair, you know, when you broadcast, you got to be fair because people see what you see on TV. So it's a little difficult, but the good thing is I don't know a lot of guys in the league that much anymore that I've played with.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it easier to just be honest and fair and be objective about a game.
Right. And you have a radio show too, right?
I do. I do on Sunday. It's called From the Pitch. So we have a good time with that.
Where can we hear that if we want to listen to it?
It used to be, it's Mile High Sports.
Okay.
If you go online, if you pop up Maha Sports Sundays at 4 o'clock Mountain Time, you can hear us BSing about soccer.
Awesome. Now, what is it like? It's just like you just touched on it. How amazing it is for the American fan now. You know, the World Cup was just a blast this last year. I guess it was a year ago already.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Just a blast to go, you know, drive past a restaurant. Or, you know, like I went to go watch games out, and I couldn't even get into some places.
Yeah.
Just packed, and the chants and the American Outlaws everywhere, and the different chapters, and it's just unbelievable to see.
And the chance of I believe we can win.
We can win, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
We'll win.
Yeah.
There
I
go.
But I mean, in all seriousness, like, kind of like we were talking about, like in the maybe not even 94, though we were kind of growing on it. You wouldn't be seeing it like growing where like everybody's going around just waving, hey, I believe we can win, and just chanting it and chanting it.
And just
buddy, they sang it this past weekend at the KC game, at Sporting Kansas City, so it was awesome.
Yeah, it did.
Listen, I mean, as soccer grows, the fan base grows. We've been a soccer country now for 20 years, even though mm-hmm. we've had soccer before. But realistically, we've been a soccer nation for 20 years now, because when the league started is really when soccer people started taking off. We got a professional league.
Right.
We've got a national team that competes with anybody in the world. So, I mean, it's been fantastic. When you go to bars, when you see Soldier Field, we were in Brazil, and they showed images of Soldier Field packed of people watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't ask for anything better than that, man. You couldn't ask for anything better than that.
My best day of work, I work as an elementary school teacher during the day. It was the last World Cup, and we threw a USA soccer party during the day, because the games are right on around like noon. So all the kids come in, and everyone made like red, white, and blue cup. Like, we probably shouldn't have been doing this. We probably should have been teaching at the time, but we had the game. I was teaching all the fifth graders like these chants, and that was when Donovan put the goal in the 92nd minute or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the class, all you heard was my classroom be like, rah! You know, like kids were jumping off the radiator. The gym teacher got on the radiator with the American flag. He looked like a WWE wrestler. It was so.
Oh boy.
My best day at work ever. But it really is amazing to see, and it's like it's fun, like. You know, now, like, you know, I've grown up on soccer playing and being a fan of, but now it's, like, cool to, like, talk to, like, people who never even watched them. They love it. And not only that, like, the Premier League, everything is so, you could watch the Premier League, the Champions, anything now, you could watch it.
Yeah.
And, like, the coverage is great, you know.
And that's got to help bring more kids into it, because I've been having conversations with people, like, when people say, oh, America will never come close to a World Cup, and I'm like, you don't understand. Back in the 90s, you know, we didn't have all this technology. If you went over to Europe, it's like, oh, my God, I can't see anything. I can't call my parents because it's going to cost $6 a minute. I can't do this. With all the technology now, with satellites and everything going on, global currency, you can go over to Europe and not blink an eye. So these kids are now sitting back and saying, you know what? I can be a professional soccer player and go over to the Premier League and become a major athlete and become a celebrity and get those promotions and
I mean
everything to make that just what we see in American football and baseball and so forth.
You should hear the high school kids I talk to. They know every stat of like every player, like big player in the world. It's amazing. Like they're like, oh, you know, they know 10 times more than I do of what's
going on. But they know because they play FIFA Xbox.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're playing FIFA, the kids know by the names. I mean, my kid tells me about players I don't even know about. I'm like, who does he play for? He plays for this guy. Everything's on FIFA. So it's, you know, it's like I said, it's grown. It's awesome. I think for us, the fact that when we started this, we wanted to see this league continue and flourish into a league where it had an opportunity for our kids as they got older, or their kids got older, they'd have an opportunity to play soccer. But remember, listen, a lot of us got very fortunate. We got seen at the right time, and not everybody's going to be a professional. That's what we try to tell the kids. You know what?
Of course.
Education in this country is first. You can't be a professional soccer player without going to college. There's not that many special kids that are gifted from high school
right.
straight into a program like that and to be able to sustain a 20-year career, you know what I mean? So I think it's important that kids realize that that education, going to college, and getting that. A lot of kids leave early, don't get me wrong, because of the Generation Adidas thing. They can leave their junior years, but that degree is something that you really need to really think long and hard about.
Right. So nowadays, do you find yourself just as big as a fan of the game, or like what else do you do for fun? Is your life still pretty much just soccer, or is it like
woo.
More? Woo!
Wow, I do a lot. So no, you know, I fill my life with soccer. I'm lucky enough to be able to do TV and do that. But I run a club here in Colorado called Treble Soccer Club.
Right.
And for fun for me, to be honest with you, I love golf.
Yeah.
I've been playing golf for 20 years, and anytime I get an opportunity to go to a golf charity event or to go play golf with some friends, absolutely, that's my one thing. I also, you know, there's so many things. I mountain bike because the mountains we have here and stuff like that.
You probably got plenty of opportunity over there.
A couple of them in Colorado, I've heard.
Yeah, man.
One, maybe two.
Yeah, you got a few. You got a few trails here, not a lot. You know, so as long as you don't do it in the afternoon where the thunderstorms come, you're fine. You know, so but yeah, you know, I'm going to try to do. I've learned that I've been very fortunate with life and the people that are around me. And so you've got to start enjoying it. So I play golf as much as I can this summer. I'm going skydiving for the first time. I'm going to take that off the bucket list.
Yes.
And just try to do a few things every year that's not related to soccer.
What about you ever think about stand-up comedy?
Yeah, you know, a Hispanic guy with long hair that's been doing soccer his whole life. That's so much.
It makes me laugh just thinking about it.
your soccer. Fill a room with soccer people, I may have a shot. But
Marcelo, it's one last question before we sign up here.
Man.
What's Brian McBride like? He was my favorite player of all time.
You know what? He is. I got to say, man, you meet guys in your career that are just genuinely nice guys who are always just doing the right thing. And that's Brian McBride, man. Just a really down-to-earth guy, nice guy. When it's time to step on the field,
Warrior.
Like everybody else, we turn into these people. Even now, you know, I played the other day and a guy fouled me, and I went back to when I was 25 years old at this guy. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that we're warriors when we step on the field, and when we're off the field, we're like everybody else, man. We like to talk, we like to hang out with people, and we like genuine people, and that's what Brian McBride is.
Awesome.
Nice.
So do you still keep in shape? You still play, or?
Yeah, I just played Sunday. We got our butts handed to us 3-0, so that was fun.
Defense's fault.
But, yeah, you know, I play. There you go. I don't play defense anymore. So yeah. You know.
No, no.
I don't play. No, you know what? It's fun. I play. I play with my kids because I have a U-17 boys team. I train with them.
Oh, that's awesome.
I play Sunday nights, but I haven't played. To be honest with you, I haven't played in 10 months. I tore a tendon in my hamstring.
Jeez.
Oh, gee.
And it has taken me forever to. And, you know, back in the old days, probably 4 months. Now it's been 10. But I used to play Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. So yeah.
How many kids do you have?
I have two boys. I have a 14-year-old Owen and a 17-year-old Nicholas.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, man.
See, I laugh how he talks about how he got his butt whooped 3-0. Now, I know you have a soccer background, Scott.
Yep.
I played it very young, you know.
Yep.
It's how kids grew up. You know, when I was growing up, it's like, well, you played it as a kid. You didn't do it afterwards and all, but...
Yeah.
We had a company soccer team, and to give you an idea of how bad we were, our average loss was 20 goals.
Oh, nice.
Average.
Rock on.
Yeah, this was basically how we played soccer. All of us defenders would go to the middle line, and the other team would steal the ball, and they would kick it over heads, and we're like, wait a minute, and then we'd hear the ref blow the whistle, whew, offsides, and then it would happen again, wait a minute. We didn't hear a whistle. You're screwed, goalie.
Yep.
There you go.
I think I would pay to watch you play soccer.
Yeah, I'm,
you should charge permission for that.
I enjoy playing soccer. I just can't play with like the serious guys. The one.
So you think you could play with Mr. Balboa?
Oh, well, you know, he's been out of it for a little bit. I think I got a shot, you know. I mean, he's used to that altitude. I'll bring him to the Jersey side. I mean, I'll
get him used to the smoke.
Yeah, I'll get him on my turf, you know.
Well, you know, if I'm ever in Jersey, I will definitely, yes, play for your company team, man.
All right. Awesome. All right. The next time the Rapids are down to play the Red Bulls.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Grab
definitely
you.
Love.
Yeah,
to come
we
out.
Don't. We don't. We don't travel. We don't travel. Oh, we don't travel too much. But if I'm there with Univision, I will let you know. And if you guys have a game, man, I'd be more than happy to. If it works out, I'll play.
That'd be great, man.
And I'm not playing defense. If you're losing 20, if you're losing 20-0, I don't want any part of that defense.
You do not want to see it on the Wikipedia page. Lawless is calling you up,
you
dude.
Go.
What the hell?
You lost to a bunch of IT guys?
Hey, but you probably drink as one. You probably drink like a champion, though, right?
Oh yeah, I'm the best there, man.
There you go.
He's pretty,
that's all that counts.
He's pretty good at
that's
that.
That's all that counts.
I feel my
there
World Cup of beer.
There you go. There you go. Perfect.
Marcella, is there? If people want to follow you, check you out, check out the radio show, where should they go?
You know what? We post stuff on Twitter all the time, so it's at MarcelloBalboa17, and you know, we'll post every once in a while when we come on the show and then have some good, and I'll have a good time. You guys are welcome to call in and join us anytime.
Man. I will. Marcelo, like, this has been an absolute pleasure. I've been, you know, you could ask Mike here, I've been, like, super excited, like, since you said yes on Twitter. It's just awesome that you're so down-to-earth and, like, it was just a good time talking, man, and you really made, like, you know, someone who's been following American soccer for a while and just soccer in general, you know, it's just amazing to reach out and talk to a guy who literally, I just read an article before on you that you made the all-time starting 11.
There we go. Rock on.
That's it, man. That's it.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I was a little worried, man. I'm like, I haven't been on Twitter long, and I get it for this reason. When you text where you tweeted me, I'm sitting there going, do I respond to this? I'm not sure if this is serious or not.
Oh, man.
He'll never be on a Twitter account again.
There you go. No, man, it's not good. I'll be following you guys. We're all good, man. It's
awful.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a awesome interview and just awesome to talk to. And good luck with everything you got going on.
No, man, I appreciate it. And again, I enjoyed this. This is, when you do interviews with guys and it's more laid back, more fun, it's a lot more relaxing, you know, you can enjoy yourself a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it, man.
All right, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Have a great week.
You too, brother.
Okay, man.
Wow. That's all I got to say, Michael Berlew.
Hey, man, I mean, you told me to go get a soccer player, and it was either me with my IT people or him, so I hope I made the right choice.
Yeah, it's funny, I tweeted a couple of them, they never got back to me. Boo. Maybe I didn't do it right, but what a down-to-earth dude, man.
It's just so cool, I mean, just how laid-back he is. It's like, yeah, let's shoot and all. Hey, can we talk about this? Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, and like totally not like pushing like, you know, anything. Just
yeah,
I don't care. Like, let's talk. Yeah, but
and he, you could tell he's putting his heart into like MLS and promoting.
That was
he
what
loves
was cool.
What's seen about it. I mean, I got to talk with Don Garber. He's the commissioner at MLS. I mean, the guy's done an insane job. He's said on TV, he's doing his best to make it the top one of the top five leagues in the world, and they got a hell of a start going.
Well, it's
there.
Pretty cool. My favorite player of that I've followed all the time, coming from Liverpool, Steven Gerrard, is coming over next year, and you know, I'm sad to see him leave Liverpool because I think he's still got a lot left in the tank, but it's going to be cool to go see him 20 minutes down in Harrison over there, and I'm planning to go the first game and just.
I mean, like I said, all the stadiums are amazing. I want to make it up to Yankee Stadium one of these days and see one of the games like up there.
I saw Liverpool there last year against Man City, so that was pretty cool. I think the field's a little short, like he was saying in the one, because the outfield isn't big enough. But I still want to check it out. But just an amazing interview, and just, you know, it's just so cool to see where this podcast is going. Like I said, I think the new motto is the little podcast that could.
I like it.
Like the choo-choo train.
Mm-hmm.
But
and we're going to be derailed like that Amtrak train one day. We went too fast.
But, you know, other things, just keep, I don't even got to say, keep subscribing at VS Comedy and iTunes and follow us and all those things. I just mixed like 20 different things in one. But
follow us on iFacebook, Twitter,
iBook,
Tweet
Space. But
Friendster.
Also, please look out for the T-shirt charity thing. I'm trying to set that up as we speak. Sent a couple emails today, so hopefully that works out. And Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Show, August 30th. I know you got time, but you should come out. It's summer. It's a Sunday, and awesome acts on that. Anything to promote, bro?
I got nothing to
promote. And there he is. Thank God he lasted the entire episode.
That's a good boy. Always like, I respect the soccer player, but not you guys. Your comedy's horrible.
Anything for you, Berlo? Anything?
Nothing really to promote. So I'll say I'll promote Mike Bonner Station and Cranberry. I'm sure I'm going to request some time one of these Fridays, one of these days.
And he does a great thing down there.
He does a great show. Feeds us comedians, great crowds. Great guy. That's why I figure I'd promote him right
good
here.
Good one. Good one. Definitely. So Mike Bonner's Station. So I think that's it, people. I'm going to let this interview stand on its own. We're not going to rant any longer. Life is funny. laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
Good night, children.